Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast. Check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio.
I had essentially Friday off from you guys, but I still kind of had to work a little bit. The Dickey V Foundation went down there and hung out. The V Foundation, I got a chance to see a lot of our colleagues and bosses and just experience something that, you know, I never experienced before. And it was a great thing, being able to see Vitale and the foundation raise about, I think it was $11.5 million in a single night. Kevin Negandhi was the MC of the show, who works at ESPN, who's our SportsCenter anchor. You know, I got a chance to see everybody from Jimmy Pitaro to George Boltenheimer, the old president of ESPN. Norby was there. A lot of your basketball, college basketball colleagues, Jay was in the house.
Mike Fratello,
very mob
Jersey's
bossy.
Jersey's own mafia. Let's go, yeah. Mike.
Very, very mob bossy.
The czar of the telestrator.
Yes, he is.
What is it? Rick Barnes.
Rick Barnes, yeah. Scott Drew.
I'm trying to think, man, it was a bunch of them. Let's just put it that
Jay
way.
Jay Wright.
Coach Wright was there. He was clean, as I would say, pimping, clean. He was looking real, like, slick.
Any
like,
breaking news? Ready. Any breaking news?
Well, I don't know if it's going to be breaking or not, but you know how it is. I can smell some purple and gold in the future. I don't know if that means, I don't know if that means today, tomorrow, next week, 2 years from now. See. I can just smell NBA. I can smell it. Speaking you know? But I had a good time. Very, yeah. Very Florida-like. It was some of the conversations that I had in my car driving over, I can't necessarily share on the air, but it's very, just put it this way, very Florida-like.
If there's a weekend packed for sports, so it was this weekend. I mean, between the Kentucky Derby, between the Canelo fight, that I know you're going to give us a quick breakdown on, all the NBA games. I mean,
it was a big sports weekend.
It was a great weekend.
Yankees got rained out one day, had a doubleheader yesterday. I mean, there was time for nothing else but sports this weekend. But the Sixers, I think, is like, look, they moved heaven and earth to get James Harden. And then when they finally got there, found out, oh, wait, it's not James Harden. They go down 0-2, and they don't have Embiid. And this series looked like it was a wrap, man. This thing was over. Then Embiid comes back. They get game 3. And then James Harden did what he did last night. And all of a sudden, the pressure's on the Miami Heat because they got to defend home court now. Here's man. Joel Embiid at the post-game presser.
That's the reason why he's here. You know, that's the reason why we brought him. You know, since he's gotten here, he's been adjusting, you know, based on what we need from him, whether it's playmaking and tonight, you know, just going and getting the bucket, especially based on, you know, out there we're guarding everybody else and making tough shots. He's been doing that his whole career, and, you know, that's why he's here. So, you know, he's only 2-2. We got a lot of work to do, but I'm excited about, you know, what we can accomplish.
Jay Harden had 31, mm-hmm. but you heard, like, you know, there's this sense that, hey, we can be better. And I think that's right. I think Harden can be better than he was, but he was very, very good. What did you see?
Their team was better. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't expect James Harden, if you watched the game last night, to make all these difficult three-point shots. He was 6-10 from the three-point line, right? Only took 2 two-pointers, made a lot of contested threes. So I don't expect this to be the norm every single night. But their team shot the hell out of the basketball. They shot 49% from the three-point line. I was talking to Alan Yates about this before the show. Danny Green. Hello, Danny Green. Welcome to being here in Philly making shots, right? Tobias Harris, they made shots. That's what you want from their team. Here's what it comes down to for me and Miami, though. They struggle shooting the ball. Last two games, shooting 21% from the three-point line. Duncan Robinson, where are you? In the Atlanta series, literally like 9 games ago, you had 23 points
won't play
on
him, Jay.
28 minutes. He's played a total of 1 minute in this series.
They're targeting
1 minute
him
in this series.
They're, you know.
But Max, a couple years ago, he signed a 5-year, $90 million deal to be your three-point shooter. So when you think about Miami, when it comes down to the fourth quarter, they struggle scoring. They rank towards the bottom of the NBA in scoring in fourth quarter points. Jimmy Butler had 40. Bam had 21. Tyler Hero didn't have a great game last night. He typically can come together. But you need three-point shooting to open up the court for other guys to attack the rim.
So you're talking about Spolstra. You think Spolstra needs to play Duncan Robinson?
I just think it's – I don't know if it's Spolstra, but I trust Eric Spolstra. He's one of the greatest coaches in the NBA. But this is a problem that reflects on the organization. If you paid this guy $90 million and he's played a total of 1 minute this entire series against a team that needs you to open up the floor now with Joel Embiid on the court.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Jay, did James Harden look out of shape last did James Harden look out of shape?
But see, Key, I don't take it as James Harden looking in shape. He made tough shots, man.
No,
he made tough shots. He got hot.
He made tough shots, but I just want to at least go back to Thursday when everybody – when I was on the show last on Thursday, when we – or everybody on the show felt as though James Harden is just like he done lost it or whatever. You got to admit, the guy gave you 31-7-9. You said 49% from the three. Well, part of his three-point shooting – attributes to that 49%.
Yeah, but Key, so, I can recognize when there's an anomaly, right? Like, if James Harden drops 35 again on those same tough shots, he's hot. Okay, but this is not who James Harden is to me anymore.
But wait, Jay, I'm curious about that.
Let me also say this, though, Jay. To close out the Toronto situation, he cooked that game, too. He had two bad games the first two games.
He cooked like that, though. And if you watch the games last night, man, like he didn't create James Harden separation on a lot of his shots.
That's what I was going to ask you about.
Like
he was getting shots
like barely off the contested fingers of people. He got hot, but this is not who James Harden is all the time.
Jay, why can't
I'm going to take that 31-7-9 and keep it moving.
Yeah, why?
Oh, yeah, I'm not discouraging him on it. I'm just saying it's buying Joel Embiid time to be the player that we know Joel Embiid can be. It's a great game.
But the reason I asked you this to begin with is so that you can explain to me why is the 31-7-9 in the fashion in which you got it, it is somewhat a problem.
I didn't say it was a problem. No, the word problem never came out of my mouth.
No, I used problem. You didn't use
I know.
Problem. But why is it like not only you but others feel like, is it just that when you didn't see it coming last week, now all of a sudden – is coming and people aren't satisfied with it?
Well, I didn't say I wasn't satisfied with it. I just said I don't expect that every game.
Hold on, I have a question.
That's not the norm for him.
Jay, why can't he do what he did? What I saw last night was he had some step back threes. They were, maybe he doesn't, not quite as quick as he was, but he created separation off rhythm and little quick feet. And that's what he does, right? He's very good at stepping back behind the line and hitting that three.
This is a very hot topic. The game to me last night was not about James Harden. It was not. So I know people will try to make it about James Harden. The game last night was about Philly's ability to knock down threes from the outside and hit at double the clip of Miami. Now, a lot of that is due to James Harden's passing ability.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm not discouraging James Harden in his play. You guys are trying to make it seem like
I'm
discouraging.
I don't know why you're so down on James Harden.
You guys are doubling down on that play, and that's not my point.
I'm just saying I don't expect
him to drop 31 every single night on that kind of offensive shooting. It was the overall play of their team.
But as you said, Embiid's going to be getting back to his normal self, right?
Go ahead, Key.
No, I was going to say, listen here, thick skull. I'm not trying to.
But Max is.
No, I'm not trying. I'm trying to understand. You are the basketball savant and the expert. I'm trying to understand if a guy gives me 31-7-9, I don't give a damn how he gave it to me. 49% as a team shooting from three. If I can get that every single night, I'm probably going to win most games.
That's what
he's
saying,
Key.
It's not sustainable. That's not sustainable.
That's what I'm saying.
But so far, in the last three out of four games, he's giving you that twice. Out of the last two of four games, he's given that to you twice, right?
Well, he hasn't given you that type of shooting. He's giving you the passing ability. That's why I said last night it's about them knocking down shots, and you're seeing what team they could be when they're knocking down shots, right? That's my whole point. And Miami is not in the fourth quarter. They struggle to score. So the conversation is not about James Harden. It's about you can't expect him to drop 30 every single night. Mm-hmm. but it's about them knocking down, open up the perimeter.
As you said, like if Kyle Lowry isn't getting guys the ball where they need to get it as well because he's not giving you the minutes at the high quality, they may not hit shots as well. Whereas if Harden's giving it to you right where you need it, then all of a sudden the three-point shooting goes up. Then there's what happened in the West and why the NBA's best team might be in trouble for a second straight series.
What?
Next on ESPN Radio and Sirius XM Channel 80.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Did you guys see this Sky Sports coverage?
Formula One?
Formula One, whatever they call it.
Formula One race down Miami. Have you ever been to this, by the way?
No, I'm not messing with
it. Max, I've been to two of them. I love it. Yes. Here's the thing.
Good for you guys. I'm happy for you. It's not for me.
Go away and tell me about Mark Brundle. Go ahead and tell me what happened last night. Because I saw it. I saw it, and I was kind of appalled by it.
Well, he's interviewing Paolo Banchero. And he seems to think – Paolo Banchero is a basketball player who went to Duke.
Yes, who's 6'10 and a half, by the way.
I'm not sure if you're aware of him.
Thank you, Max.
And he thinks he's Patrick Mahomes, apparently. Listen to the interview.
This is crazy. I've never been to an F1 race. This is spectacular.
It's amazing to be allowed right in the middle of the competitors just before the race starts.
Yeah, now you can see they locked in. It reminds me of myself. The real focus.
Okay, it's not Patrick. That's why he ignored me in the beginning. But what is your name, sir?
Paolo Banchero.
Right, okay. Well, I thought I was talking to somebody else. So I'm sorry about that. Whatever.
The best is that he just dismisses the interview. I'm like, you still interview potentially the number one 2022 NBA draft pick. Like, it's not like, it's a throwaway interview. It's still okay. But how you mistaking Paolo Banchero for Patrick Mahomes?
I have a theory on that. y'all looking at the height, right? If you look at him from a distance and you really just don't know, sometimes people all kind of look the same to you regardless. He probably has no idea how tall Patrick Mahomes is. He just thinks all quarterbacks are tall.
First of all, he's not from here, right? So he's not as familiar with the athletes over here, presumably. Secondly, this is something my brother used to talk about. You know, you ever hear Ghetto Boys, My Mind's Playing Tricks on Me? Mm-hmm. Their first big, big hit, right? Well, Bushwick Bill, who is what's nowadays called a little person, right, in his verse was talking about a nightmare he had. And he said he stood about 6 or 7 feet, and we'll do the edited version. Now, that's the creep I'll be seeing in my sleep. And my brother used to say, you know, what's funny is that there's a big difference between 6 and 7 feet, but maybe not from Bushwick Bill's perspective. You see what I'm saying? So this dude is a shorter dude. He doesn't know the athletes of this country as well. And all he knows is, he stood about 6 or 7 feet. You know,
yeah, guy's Mahomes really tall.
Yeah, no. Mahomes is closer to 6, and Banchero's closer to 7.
His producer set him up, man. I'm yelling at my producer on that one. I'm yelling. It could have been Ben Simmons. Hey, it looks like Patrick Mahomes.
I don't know that he has a producer. He's just wandering around the pit lane.
Somebody had to tell this man that was Patrick Mahomes.
No, he said, oh, look, there's Patrick. I'm going to go get him.
Curtis Granders, J. Will.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.
Back to DFS for three, and he bags it! A career-high 7 triples for Dorian Finney-Smith.
Felt good when I made the first 3-4. Luka told me a bunch more about the cover.
When he's playing like that, when he's aggressive and not thinking about the shot and just catch and shoot, he's as good as anyone.
Final Mavericks 111, Phoenix 101. We're down to a best of three in this second round series.
Oh, Yates. Yates is on it. There it is. My mind's playing tricks on me. It's one of the all-time greats.
Woo!
Guys, both series knotted at 2-2. Three-game series. Suns and Mavs now three-game series. Obviously, Sixers and Heat is now a three-game series. But the interesting thing, and the Suns looked like they were just going to roll the Mavs, right? Not anymore. The interesting, before we even get to the game, guys, did you see what Chris Paul tweeted after game 4 in Dallas? I will read you the tweet. Want to fine players for saying stuff to fans, but fans can put their hands on family members. Mm-hmm. Bleep that. Chris Paul's mother, wife, 2 kids watched the game close to the Suns bench, and his mom had hands put on her, and his wife was pushed, a source told ESPN's Dave McMenamin. And Chris Paul's kids saw the whole thing. Dallas said in a statement, it is unacceptable behavior. It will not be tolerated. The Mavericks, along with American Airlines Arena, swiftly removed the fan from Sunday's game. So before we even get into the Chris Paul and the Ja Morant of it all, right? What do you guys think? Just, Jay, the fact that his family, like, he's upset that hands were put on his family.
Here's what's happening. It's first off, you should never put your hands on anybody. Keep your hands to yourself. And I'm glad that Mark Cuban and the Dallas Mavericks made a statement afterwards saying that they acknowledged that they had the young man removed. The kid looked like he was about 15 years old, by the way, as CP3 was, you know, chatting with him on the way out of the stadium. But it really poses the question that as an athlete, Key, do we feel comfortable inviting our families to away arenas in playoff games, knowing how fans drink, knowing how fans engage, and knowing that the information out there about who your family is, about how they partake in social media, it can become a bigger thing. And, you know, look, I'm not making any excuses for the young man because you should never put your hands. That's why I started the conversation off this way. And I'm glad that the organization has protected CP3's family. I can see why CP3 is appalled and angry at the situation. But at the same time, it makes you question that as a player. Like, do you want to put your family members in that situation knowing how fans can inflame the situation?
Yeah, I'm going to put my family members in that situation because I know my family. I ain't even worried about it. You know, that's the least of our worry. We ain't, you know, trust me, I've seen it up close to person in my own career where my family had to take matters into their own hands to defend whatever was going on in the stands with them and fans. So I don't even worry about that. And if I'm Chris Paul, you keep bringing your family to the games, man. Don't allow them to discourage you from your family having a moment with you. And if next time somebody see them put their hands on Chris Paul's parents, a sister, kids, mother, whoever, they need to go put hands on them. And I understand he might have been young. I understand he might have been 15, 16, 17, whatever his age was. At the end of the day, don't put your damn hands on nobody. Right, I don't care. Period, man. Don't put your damn hands. We keep having this same conversation. We had it, whether you could be verbal towards somebody, you could throw something at somebody. Now you actually physically touching somebody's mom. I mean, you lost your damn mind.
Yeah, look, you.
But
you
that
are...
all starts in the home, okay? It all starts in the home. That ain't nothing but something being taught at home.
Yeah, look, you are in a sporting event, in an arena. It's not just like everywhere else, like walking down the street, because everyone comes together with a rooting interest. So you're allowed to say the equivalent of, and I'll clean it up for the radio, right? You stink. Like, you can't just, you walk down the street, you yell that at somebody, it's different. But in a sporting arena, you understand that's part of the game. But here's what's not, okay? In other respects, like, don't say something past what's happening on the court in terms of competition that you wouldn't say to someone in the street. Don't do anything that you wouldn't do to someone on the street. You're not going to just start throwing stuff at somebody, right? What do you think is going to happen? You're not going to put your hands on somebody. You're not going to curse them to the floor about their family or anything like that. You're not going to do it. Why would you do it in an arena? It doesn't make sense.
And you say, you know, you say, well, should we not have our family members go to away games? No. Our family members should be allowed to go to away games, home games, and anywhere we play.
No, Key, I was just saying when you get deep into the playoffs.
No, I understand.
Like, you know, it's just something that players sometimes should think about. That's all. That's all. It poses that.
Yeah,
guys are going to do whatever they want to do, Key. Bring your families to whatever game. I'm not trying to discourage you from doing so.
You probably can hire some security if you choose to do so, whatever the case may be. But I think personally, guys should do what they feel.
Of course.
They want to do. And if Chris wants to take his family to the away games, he should have the luxury to be able to do that without having to worry about the safety of his family members in an arena.
That shouldn't be a luxury.
I would
really
like to hear a more detailed report about what actually happened. Because watching the video, the kid looked like he was 15 years old.
Yeah, he's
15, 16 years old. So I just want to hear more
about. Not that 15 and 16 year olds can't misbehave. They can.
Yeah, yes, of course.
But you want to find out what happened.
Yes.
Right? That's Straight Talk brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. By the way, Chris Paul was in foul trouble all game and wound up fouling out. Did not have a very good game. Ja Morant is, you know, hurt, basically, because of a play that he thought was dirty, which I don't know if it was dirty. There's like a lot going on in that series. A long shot wins the Kentucky Derby, and why it's a long shot that the Grizzlies will now beat the Warriors. By the way, I just switched series in my head. Right?
I said John Morant. I didn't know what you were talking about.
Yeah. I just combined the Suns, Mavs, and I watched a lot of basketball over the weekend.
It's a long weekend, baby.
I was like, wait, John's playing for Phoenix?
Yeah,
it's a long weekend.
I just
Max
combined at least, by the way, at least two series. I'm lucky I didn't bring Kyle Lowry up.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus! Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's LECTRICEbikes.com.
Hey! Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, ESPN Radio, Sirius XM, Channel 80, and your smart speakers. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. It is time for No Huddle. Get you caught up on everything from the sports weekend. First Saturday in May is the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah.
We saw an upset for the ages, gentlemen.
You sound caffeinated now, Max. You ready? You sound caffeinated. Let's go, baby!
Did Ja Morant play in the Kentucky Derby? I'm pretty sure I saw something.
Did we confuse him with Patrick Mahomes?
Here's the horse. Here's the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And they're into the stretch, and it's Messier, Crown Pride, and Epicenter is coming up on the outside. Epicenter has taken the lead as they arrive into the final furlong. Sandon is coming after him. Epicenter and Sandon, these two, stride for stride. Simplification down the outside is next. They're coming down to the wire. Epicenter's ended. Rich Strike is coming up on the inside. Oh, my goodness. The longest shot has won the Kentucky Derby. Rich Strike has done it in a stunning, unbelievable upset.
Max, can I tell you what happened to me?
Yeah.
I have money on Epicenter. So as Zen and Epicenter are going down the stretch, you can only imagine me, Keith, standing up like, yes, yes, yes. And then I see Rich Strike in 17th position start to make that turn around the stretch. And I'm just like, no, no, no. And the fact that he won it, I mean, first off, I threw something at my TV. Secondly, really happy for everybody to bet on 80-1 odds in this game for Rich Strike. But the fact is, it's fastest quarter mile in the race's 148-year history. History. That's what we saw.
Kentucky Derby. That's,
oh,
yeah,
my
yeah.
God. I mean, so much to get into with the Derby between Jack Harlow, Drake, and Rich Strike. It was a weekend.
Do you guys see who has 80-1 odds to win the Super Bowl?
Who?
New York Jets.
I was about to say the Jets.
You.
That would be a Rich Strike.
We'll
am I right?
Tie it together to the Jets.
So wait. So, Jay, how much money did somebody win?
If you
it was
bet,
the largest
if
bet.
Bet
well, largest what bet. Was the largest
it's the best bet?
Bet.
Oh,
I think
okay.
It's the best bet take.
If someone put even a G down, that's a nice little payday.
Oh, my God.
But what if someone put, like, 10 Gs down?
They ain't going to work today.
$8 million.
They ain't going to work today.
I think. I don't know.
They ain't going to work today,
my
Keith.
My math isn't as good as Aaron Boone.
Yeah, that's $800 Gs.
Keith, when that boss calls and it's you're about 30 minutes late, where are you? Like, I quit.
Yeah,
leave my ass alone.
When Chappelle married Oprah from the
I'm rich.
I'm rich. Came in. I never approved this.
Y'all. It's poor people around.
On Friday, Ryan Poles was on Cap and Jay Hood on ESPN 1000 and asked about the lack of moves from Chicago this offseason to help second-year quarterback Justin Fields. Poles said it's not because they're not fully committed to Fields. Here he is, Ryan Poles, Bear GM, on Cap and Hood on ESPN 1000, Cap and Jay Hood, on his confidence in Justin Fields.
We're all in on Justin. I believe in Justin. Our staff believes in Justin. And like I said from the beginning, we're gonna set this up for him to succeed. And I know I've got a lot of questions. But what about receiver? What about it? We're going to do the best we can with the roster. We're going to improve the roster as well, but we're also going to get the scheme. We're going to get his technique. And our coaches are hard at work, and so is Justin. I mentioned this earlier today. Justin is grinding right now, and he's putting in the time. The leadership piece is coming out of him. So I'm excited. I'm excited about him and what he's going to become here.
That's a great thing about Justin Fields and his ability as a young player to adapt to the situation that he was given. And, I mean, when you think about Trey Lance for a minute and where he's at with the Chicago Bears, I meant Zach Wilson, where he's at with the Chicago Bears. Oh, I'm sorry. I meant – oh, no, I'm just kidding. That was for you, Max. I think when you look at, though, Justin Fields' situation versus, like, the New York Jets and the way that they went all out of the Jacksonville Jaguars, the way that they spent money in free agency to help Trevor Lawrence out, all three of these quarterbacks are in different situations based on where the organization is at and what they feel. I don't necessarily think Jacksonville spending the type of money upgraded the team where they're going to fight for the conference or even the division, where – the Jets, if they get hot, it could be interesting depending on what the young quarterback and Zach Wilson is all about. But there's no rush in Justin Fields. Take your time, build it the right way, and now all of a sudden you get a young quarterback that you can groom and he can be there and be happy for a long time.
Yeah, I never – you know, people – Ryan Poles has came out multiple times and talked about how he wants to build this franchise over a sustainable amount of time, right, to be patient. So I get where there is the hyper awareness and anger from, well, we didn't draft a wide receiver. We didn't get that blockbuster name, Key. We came out and in the second round, in the fifth round, we got more defensive-ended players. But at the same time, like, just be patient with the process.
Let's also keep in mind, the Bears had to trade up to get Justin Fields in the first place, right? So they used some of their draft capital to go get their quarterback. Now you got to give them. And also, they weren't finishing with 15 losses, right? They were competitive when they had Trubisky in there. So they now have to replenish some draft value and go out and surround Justin Fields just like the Jets surrounded Zach Wilson.
By the way, Key, just as many holes on the defensive end as there is on the offensive end for the Bears, by the way.
Yeah, and Chicago is not ready to take a giant leap. I don't think Jacksonville is ready to take a giant leap, although they do have Doug Peterson that won a Super Bowl. He knows how to coach. They, you know, so spending a little bit of money there, Max, I'm okay with that. And the Jets had a ton of draft picks.
Yeah.
They had to use them to build the team. Chicago, like you said, they just don't.
They're in different positions. Let them see what happens the way they build around Justin Fields. Meantime, guys, Dimitri Bivol retained his light heavyweight title with a unanimous decision against Canelo Alvarez. All three judges had every round scored the same and wound up with scorecards 115-113, which, let me translate, with no knockdowns or point deductions. That means they all had the same seven rounds for Bivol and the same five rounds for Canelo. They all saw it the same way, decisive win for Bivol. Now, he was the number one pound for pound in many people's estimation. I did not have Canelo number one pound for pound. I have a fighter named Terrence Bud Crawford number one pound for pound, and I have had for years. I've had him right there. However, a lot of people are down now on Canelo's ridiculous. For years, I was saying Bivol is, who was undefeated, very good technical fighter, and a light heavyweight, super middleweight, light heavyweight, when Canelo's really like a middleweight, super middleweight. That's the most difficult fight for Canelo, 175 and below. That's the guy with the best chance to actually beat him because of his style and his excellence, right? Canelo didn't run. And by the way, he wasn't a big name. Canelo could have taken a million guys, made better action fights, and he'd have had a better chance to win.
So he moved up in weight class.
Yeah, he moved up to light heavy to fight him in his prime. This dude's in his prime. So when people are critical of Canelo, he took a big risk, minimum reward, maximum risk, and he lost, right? And by the way, people talk about the scorecards. The possible range of scores that I would have taken anywhere from 9-3 to 7-5 for Bivol. All three judges gave Canelo all the benefits of the doubt, and he still lost 7-5.
What do you think this does overall to Canelo's legacy?
No, I mean, he started...
You know, it was trending over like what his legacy actually is now.
He was junior middleweight champ, super middleweight champ, and he won against Kovalev at light heavy, and then took Kovalev was over the hill, knocked Kovalev out. Okay, let me go back up and take the hardest guy to beat. No one wants to fight Bivol because no one knows who he is, and he's really technically good. So he lost. So what does it do to his legacy? It would have, like, just like a basketball player. Had he beaten Bivol, it enhances his legacy.
CP3.
Right. The fact that he loses to Bivol, it doesn't take away from it. It's just not as enhanced as it would have been. Right? Like, that's all. But he wants to have a rematch with Bivol. If I were Canelo, advising Canelo, you don't need him. Like, the style is wrong for you. Bivol is very, very good. You can make a million other great fights where you have a better chance to win than a technical boxer of Bivol's quality in his prime who's a naturally larger guy. I'd leave him alone. Anyway, Steph Curry at the Warriors. Well, before I even get to that, Ja's not going to play. This is why Ja was on my mind before, and I slipped him into the Sun series. Ja Morant is unlikely to play in Game 4 against the Warriors. He's listed as doubtful, and Coach Taylor Jenkins said he got further evaluation going on, but from what I've been told, there's probably a real good chance he doesn't play Monday, tonight. Ja was injured when grabbing for a loose ball against two Warriors defenders, including Jordan Poole.
But was he injured that play specifically?
Oh,
go ahead,
interesting.
Matt.
Jay has something on that. Here's Steph on whether, because Ja made a reference to he broke the code, right? Mm-hmm. Which is what Steve Kerr had said earlier in the series about a play. So Ja tried to say, and Steph's like, hold on. This is what Steph had to say about Ja insinuating it was dirty.
It's unfortunate that is a conversation right now because obviously nobody wants to see anybody get hurt. But there's nothing malicious about what Jordan did. There's no comparison to what Dylan did or Draymond, like nothing in that vein. So it's not a joking matter. Ja's hurt, but all the rest of it's just total BS in terms of the conversation right now. So I remember that term they came up with, hot stove contact. That's what it felt like. Keep it moving.
Was it a dirty play, Jay?
So was it a play that looked awkward? Yes, I think it looked awkward. But I didn't see that as something as a dirty play. I didn't actually see Ja Morant squeal or complain about that play at that moment, which if you're not complaining about that play at that moment, then wouldn't you complain about a dirty play after a dirty play just occurred? To me, it felt like Ja hurt his knee more so in the closeout going against Klay earlier in that game. But that's me, frankly. I just want guys to stop complaining and just play hoops. You know, like, they were getting blitzed at that time in the game. Like, Golden State was playing better.
Yeah, they were going to lose.
They were going to lose easily. So, like, my thing, were there dirty plays in the first two games? Yes, there were. But in this game, that, to me, it seemed like a basketball type of play.
Key a
coach,
punch.
Coach.
Key a punch.
Jay.
Yes.
How is that? What? I don't understand. As I'm continuing to watch the video, who ever came up and said it's a dirty play because I'm reaching for the basketball and I touch your knee as I'm grabbing, trying to get the basketball. I'm grabbing and I happen to grab your knee. I don't even understand how people could even try to make that even.
Not people, it's Ja. Because Ja's the one who said it.
Ja's the one that, you know, put out after the game and says, you know, broke the code and things of that sort. So my thing is, like, look, for Ja.
Come on, man.
Ja's been playing his tail off. Question becomes around Jaren Jackson, and Bane is a little bit beat up, and some of the other players really stepping up for these moments. But at the end of the day, man, like, hoopers are going to hoop. These things are going to happen. And I sent Evan Wilner, our producer, a clip of Desmond Bane literally diving into the knees of Jordan Poole, which could have been considered a dirtier play than the play that everybody's trying to make Jordan Poole out to be. Jordan Poole looks like he's reaching for the ball. It looks awkward in slow-mo, but in real time, you would never. The play with Desmond Bane is a crazier play. Mm-hmm. Could have taken out the names of the knees of Jordan Poole. So my thing is, stop complaining. Let's hoop, go out and win the damn game.
Well, I guess for Ja's sake, you're building in a little bit of an excuse when you wind up.
Yes.
But Key, if I'm the Warriors and I had posted the video clip of Desmond Bane trying to dive into the knees of Jordan Poole when the ball is nowhere even close to the play, that's a really dirty play. So if you wanted to complain, the Warriors could have complained. But my thing is, when you start complaining after the game is over, not even in the midst of the game by making it a bigger deal, after you've been smacked by 20-plus points, it looks to me like you're giving me a lot of excuses.
It is a chippy series at the very least, right? And Key, what you just said, and Jay, what you follow up with, I agree with. I never thought it was dirty at all. Upon closer inspection, it's possible because, like, he kind of pulls at the knee, so it's a little ambiguous, but I'll say this. When Ja says after the game, they were down like 18, whatever it was, they were down between like 14 and 21 points by that time of the game a lot, right? When Ja brings it up, it sounds like an excuse in a game they were going to lose anyway, right? It's whether or not it's true that guys are kind of bending the rules a little bit and getting physical, but it sounds like an excuse.
But guys, like, when you're in the game and then you start complaining about it being a dirty play at that time, that's different. You know what I mean?
Well, except maybe you think, all right, I can deal with this, and then later on you're like, damn, I can't deal with this.
No, if somebody grabs me and something hurts, like, I'm like, yo!
Yeah.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Come on, I'm reacting. I'm reacting to you right then and there in that moment. I'm trying to fight you. I'm getting hyped about it.
Yeah.
As soon as it happens, your reaction is going to be, what the hell? Because you're going to feel it, but you may not actually feel whatever it was that was injured until you walk off or something along those lines. But even so, at that moment, if you thought that was not a dirty play, not a good play, a basketball play, you'd have threw your hands up for sure.
But what about if you don't know, what, like, you're just thinking it's in the mix, and then you see video replay, and you're like, oh, hang on, he grabbed my knee. Like,
Max, I know when you grabbing my knee. I know when you were grabbing my knee, when you hit me upside the head, any of those sort of, I know. And the first thing I'm going to do is be like, yo, what the hell are you doing? I'm going to throw my hands up and scream for bloody murder. That's just what you're going to do. Looking at it, I know when people look at it, it looked like he pulled his knee. Mm-hmm. But when you have a blind spot and you're reaching in to try to get the basketball and you touch somebody's body, you're pulling away. I don't think he did it intentionally to injure him at all whatsoever. It just happened to look that way when you slow it down. Because in fast motion, you would never even think that.
Well, here's the thing. Some of these other series, like Sixers, Heat, everyone's defending home court, right? I think the Heat, the pressure's now on the Heat in the East, right? Suns and Mavs, people are defending home court. Here we have a situation where they split on the road already. And now the Grizzlies are going to have to try to split on the road without Ja Morant likely. Here's Taylor Jenkins, Grizzlies head coach, on Ja's status postgame.
Nothing's changed from there in terms of that was the play that triggered this. And, you know, he's got further evaluation going on. That's Ja who I'm talking about with his knee.
If he can't go in game four, Jay, I know the Grizzlies had a great record without him. Like, everyone steps up and all that stuff. Can they beat the Warriors at Golden State? Will they beat the Warriors at Golden State if it's without Ja?
No, man. No. They will be down 3-1 in this series on the verge of closeout. coming back to Memphis, and now you're going to ask Ja to come back off that knee injury and to be prolific once again. Dude's been averaging close to 30, man, in these playoff series. I mean, he's been prolific. With the exception of Jaren Jackson, who played well in game one, where he had 33 points, like, he really hasn't been getting a lot of help. Key, we talked about him dropping 47, actually outscoring Golden State down the stretch late in the fourth quarter in that game two for them to defend home court to a degree to split, right? So my thing is Ja has to be prolific, and I know what the regular season record is, but there's nothing that makes me believe that this Memphis team will actually be able to come together. And other guys, Desmond Bane has also been injured as well with the lower back thing, so he's been a shell of himself. So without Ja, I don't think they have a chance.
Well, look, without Ja, they won't win this game. With Ja, maybe he comes back or they go back to Memphis. But at the end, even if they get to 3-2, they're going back to Golden State. So it's like, it's pretty much, I guess for me, it's pretty much over. You may not concede this early in the situation as a player, but I'm not a player, and I'm looking at it and saying they're going back 3-1. Let's say they do get one back at home and it goes to 3-2. It swings back to Golden State again, and that means it's a wrap.
So, guys, here's the one thing about Ja, and we can move along. But like Luka, you know, like, so winning time is on. I know a lot of the Lakers don't like winning time, and I like the Lakers, but, oh, do I enjoy watching this thing. It's like candy, you know? And now they're up to the season finale, where I assume they will cover the finals. Magic Johnson, forget about the fact that he dropped 42, 15, and 7 as a 20-year-old rookie jumping at center, even though he was a point guard, right, and won the chip in the decisive game in the finals. But Magic throughout the series and throughout the – everyone got the ball. The offense all flowed. Everyone stayed hot because Magic made sure of it, right? Luka Doncic, who's compared to guys like Magic and LeBron, has had to learn in this series how to keep guys around. Like when, Jay, you say Ja's not getting help, but they're all helping each other when Ja's not playing. Then when Ja plays, other guys get cold. Same thing with Luka. Brunson steps up when Luka's not playing. The key now, not everyone's Magic Johnson. I don't care how great you are. The key now for guys like Luka and Ja is to make sure that they get theirs and also make sure that the guys around them stay hot. That's kind of their job as the primary ball handler. And that's something I have my eye on for Dallas and for Memphis, right? Can your amazing all-world primary ball handler guy do a Magic Johnson? Not just step up when you need him to keep his guys hot.
Yeah, I mean, but for Memphis, they don't have that choice because Ja's not playing in game four.
Right, so I think guys can step up, but can Ja, can they, like, if they would have stepped up while Ja was on the floor, to me, that's on him a lot.
Yeah, but Steven Adams still hasn't played health and safety protocol. Desmond Bane is banged up. He's banged up, right, in this series. Jaren Jackson always seems to get in foul trouble. I think there's still questions around this team without Ja. And then when you think about Luka, yeah, I hear what you're saying, but Luka hasn't really played well the last two games. You got Jalen Brunson step up big time in game two. And then you have Dorian Finney-Smith last night where people are like, oh, if he could play that way all the time. I'm like, wait, now we're trying to say Jalen Brunson and Dorian Finney-Smith need to be the guys when Luka can't be the guys. Still not enough, in my opinion, but we'll see.
Keyshawn, J. Will and Max, presented by Progressive Insurance. Guys, I said stuff about Steph Curry. Everyone gets real hot on this show. Oh, you can't say Steph's not perfect, and he's already the greatest player in any sport of all time. Oh, wait a minute, guys. Shut up, Max. They're wrong. Here's Kendrick Perkins, ESPN NBA analyst, on First Take on what this postseason means for Steph's legacy.
If Steph Curry wants to crack in that top 10 category of greats of all time, the one thing that those top 10 players have is a finals MVP. And all I'm saying is if he wants to move from being in the top 15 greatest of all time to the top 10 player of all time, he has to get that finals MVP trophy under his belt.
Oh, well said, Kendrick.
Perkins, be quiet. You talk too much.
But here's the thing. Like, you don't just get to be top 10 because you're great. And then, well, let's not take anything away from him. You, as great as you are, you have to earn your way into a club of the greatest players of all time. And Steph is up there, but I would not say top 10. I agree with Perkins.
But who has said top 10? Who's put Steph in the top 10?
I think there's a lot of talk, and you are one of the leaders of the talk about Can I put him in the top 10?
The conversation definitely warrants itself.
Yep.
I mean, it's a conversation. Nobody said he's, you know, confirmed in the top 10. Mm-hmm. I said right now he's an outside looking in, but I do believe when it's all said and done, he will be top 10.
Fair enough.
Yeah, if he could steal that MVP and grab one, he starts to slide himself for sure in the top 10 conversation. No question about it.
But let's also be honest, though, about when they won that chip, where he didn't get the finals MVP, when they gave it to Iguodala, he should have got finals MVP.
Oh, you mean
and
the
I
one?
Know what it says on the paper.
Yeah.
The dude averaged 27.
You mean the one where Kyrie and Kevin Love were hurt and it still went six games?
Doesn't that matter, one? Man. Oh, injuries okay. are part of the game.
Is James Harden trending back to being a top 10 player right now, Jay? That's next on ESPN Radio, SiriusXM, Channel 80.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast.